Let's open our Bibles to Ezekiel chapter number 23 today, where we dropped off yesterday. And let me give the fair warning to those of you that might have younger listeners in the room with you. This is definitely PG-13 material. I need to have the freedom to talk to you openly about the text itself and what it means. And I can't do that if you're worried about younger kids hearing things that they want to talk to you about and you're not ready for that discussion yet. So I've got you a little bit extra time so that you could either turn the radio off or chase them out of the room. And so now we're going to move forward. This is something that's happening in 590 BC, shortly before the Babylonians arrive to do the judgment against Jerusalem that God directs. And this is an extended parable that God wants to use to teach history with, and also what's about to happen. And so here's how it works. Chapter 23, verse 1, the word of He who is came to me. This is Ezekiel speaking up in Babylon. Son of man, there were two women, the daughters of one mother. So we got two sisters. They played the whore in Egypt. They played the whore in their youth. There their breasts were pressed and their virgin bosoms handled. So these two symbolic women were messing around in Egypt, and they allowed themselves to be manhandled. They had no problem with it. They gave themselves away. This is a representation of the people of Israel during their 430 years in Egypt. They lost touch with God, and many of them became pagans in heart. And in practice, they worshipped other gods and goddesses and didn't live by the holiness that Abraham had been called to, and Isaac, and even Jacob. Verse number 4. Oholah was the name of the elder, and Oholabah the name of her sister. Now, these names mean something in Hebrew. You can tell they're built on the same root word, which is the word for tent. Oholah, the first sister's name, means her own tent. And this is going to be a reference to the northern kingdom once it splits away from the southern kingdom, because they went their own way. They had their own tent. Oholabah means the tent is in her. And this is a reference to Judah, where the temple was located, which was the replacement for the tent of the tabernacle, where the Ark of the Covenant was located. Okay, so Oholabah was the name of the elder. Oholah was the name of the elder, and Oholabah was the name of her sister. They became mine. That's when the Exodus happened. And they bore sons and daughters. That's the history in the land. As for their names, Oholah is Samaria, that's the capital city of the northern kingdom when they split away, and Oholabah is Jerusalem. So now the two sisters have distinct histories from one another. Verse 5, Oholah, northern Israel, played the whore while she was mine, and she lusted after her lovers, the Assyrians, warriors clothed in purple, governors and commanders, all of them desirable young men, horsemen riding on horses. So God describes the northern kingdom as eventually falling into a love affair. Actually, it's more of a lust affair with the Assyrian Empire. And so she ends up going after their idols, their gods and goddesses. Verse 8, she did not give up her whoring that she had begun in Egypt, For in her youth men had lain with her and handled her virgin bosom and poured out their whoring lust upon her. So basically, all of that idolatry that had kind of got started back in the Egypt days starts popping back up again in the Assyrian days. Verse 9, therefore, I delivered her into the hands of her lovers, into the hands of the Assyrians after whom she'd lusted. These uncovered her nakedness. They seized her sons and her daughters. And as for her, they killed her with the sword. And she became a byword among women when judgment had been executed on her. So that's a reference to what happened when God just allowed the Assyrian Empire to take northern Israel, to absorb it. The city of Samaria was destroyed in 723 BC, and that's the starting point for what's referred to as the Assyrian exile of the Israeli people. They disappeared up into Mesopotamia. And some of their descendants will eventually be part of those coming back in the time of Cyrus the Great. But did the southern kingdom learn from that? Verse 11. Her sister Oholibah saw this. And she became more corrupt than her sister in her lust and in her whoring, which was worse than that of her sister. She lusted after the Assyrians, governors and commanders, warriors clothed in full armor, horsemen riding on horses, all of them desirable young men. So some points of southern Judah history, especially the later portion that we've been looking at, they also kind of fell in lust with the Assyrian Empire, even though it was the tail end of it. And they wanted to make deals, and they also went after the gods and goddesses. Verse 13, I saw that she was defiled. They both took the same way. But she carried her whoring further. She saw men portrayed on the wall, the images of the Chaldeans portrayed in vermilion, wearing belts on their waists with flowing turbans on their heads, all of them having the appearance of officers, a likeness of Babylonians whose native land was Chaldea. So apparently, during some of the little interactions between southern Judah and the Assyrian Empire, some of the people actually saw on the walls of the Assyrian palaces portrayals of the Babylonians. Some of the images would have been full-color images, which is kind of mentioned here. And that intrigued these people of southern Judah. And then when the Babylonians kind of came on the scene, when they started pushing back against their Assyrian overlords and declared their independence, and then started expanding their empire and taking on the Assyrians, suddenly the Judeans kind of liked them. Verse number 16. When she saw them, she lusted after them and sent messengers to them in Chaldea. And the Babylonians came to her into the bed of love, and they defiled her with their whoring lust. And after she was defiled by them, she turned from them in disgust. So she kind of figured out that that wasn't as great a deal as she thought it would be. When she carried on her whoring so openly and flaunted her nakedness, I turned in disgust from her, as I had turned in disgust from her sister. So God says, when all that pro-Babylonian stuff started, I was disgusted by that too, the Babylonian god stuff, god and goddesses. And so God was already starting to warn about judgment coming. Yet she increased her whoring, remembering the days of her youth when she played the whore in the land of Egypt and lusted after her paramours there, whose members were like those of donkeys. This is like really R-rated material here in this point, where God, through Ezekiel, portrays southern Judah being this wild woman that is even talking about how big the sexual members of these Babylonians are and how they just want so much of that. And this is all a reference to the idea that they want the gods and goddesses. They want the worship of the Babylonians to be their type of worship. And that's a disgusting thing. And so God tries to present it here in such a disgusting way, whose members were like those of donkeys and whose issue was like that of horses. And thus you longed for the lewdness of your youth when the Egyptians handled your bosom and pressed your young breasts. So God's complaint is you guys fell right back into your idolatry of Egypt. It's just a new version of idolatry. And that's true too, by the way. The Mesopotamians, the Assyrians and Babylonians, and Egyptians share similar god stories. And that's probably because the fallen angels are the troublemakers behind the scenes making those stories. But anyway, this is the next thing God has to say. Therefore, O Holibama, thus says he who is God. So Judah, Jerusalem. Behold, I will stir up your lovers from whom you turned in disgust, and I will bring them against you from every side. The Babylonians and all the Chaldeans, Pekod and Shoah and Koah and all the Assyrians with them, desirable young men, governors and commanders, all of them, officers and men of renown, all of them riding on horses. So Ezekiel is now describing, at God's direction, the Babylonian army, the Babylonian military, which is made up of native Babylonians, native Chaldeans. You got people from Pekod and Shoah and Koah. There are even people from Assyria that joined the Babylonian military because they thought of it as being much more powerful than the old Assyrian regimes. And all of that military force is on its way against Jerusalem, against Judah. Verse 24, and they shall come against you from the north, with chariots and wagons and a host of peoples. They shall set themselves against you on every side with buckler, shield, and helmet. And I will commit the judgment to them, and they shall judge you according to their judgments. And I will direct my jealousy against them, that they may deal with you in fury. They shall cut off your nose and your ears, and your survivors shall fall by the sword. And that's, some of that is literal talk. People that surrender, civilians that surrender, many of them are going to become those transported in exile north. But those that are engaged in active fighting, some of them will be abused when they get captured. They'll have their ears and noses cut off. They shall seize your sons and your daughters, and your survivors will be devoured by fire. They shall also strip you of your clothes and take away your beautiful jewels. Clothing was considered an item of wealth very often. And so when the Babylonians come, they will plunder the kingdom. They will plunder the private homes. They will take the people they've captured and strip their clothing and their jewels right off of them. Verse 27, thus I will put an end to your lewdness and your whoring begun in the land of Egypt, so that you shall not lift up your eyes to them or remember Egypt anymore. So all of this is with the intention that the people who survive all of this, survive the Assyrian and the Babylonian exiles, will quit the idolatry stuff. And in large part, by the time we get to the New Testament period, idolatry has been eradicated from the Jewish people. Verse number 28. For thus says he who is God, behold, I will deliver you into the hands of those whom you hate, into the hands of those from whom you turned into disgust, and they shall deal with you in hatred, and take away all the fruit of your labor, and leave you naked and bare, and the nakedness of your whoring shall be uncovered. Your lewdness and your whoring have brought this upon you, because you played the whore with the nations, and defiled yourself with their idols." So God is saying, you did this to yourself. You have gone the way of your sister, therefore I will give her cup into your hand. Thus says he who is God, you shall drink your sister's cup that is deep and large. You shall be laughed at and held in derision, for it contains much. You will be filled with drunkenness and sorrow. You might remember that Jeremiah had been given a task of using a symbolic cup as the impending judgment of God. And so here it is being used again. This time it's, I made your sister drink a cup of judgment back in 723 when I ended northern Israel, and now I'm giving the same cup of judgment to you when I'm ending your nation. A cup of horror and desolation, the cup of your sister Samaria, you shall drink it and drain it out and gnaw its shards and tear your breasts. So you're going to drink it and you're even going to chew on the cup, and then you'll rip at your own breast. You'll be beaten at your breast because you're so upset with the judgment. For I have spoken, declares he who is. Therefore, thus says he who is God, because you have forgotten me and cast me behind your back, you yourselves must bear the consequences of your lewdness and whoring. So again, God's message is, you did this to yourself. Everything was plain from the very beginning. Blessings, if you stay in the covenant with me, I will be your God, you'll be my people. Curses, if you reject me as your God, I'll reject you as my people, and I'll kick you out of my land. Verse 36, he who is said to me, son of man, will you judge Oholah and Oholabah? Declare to them their abominations, for they have committed adultery, and blood is on their hands. So come on, Ezekiel, speak it, preach it, tell them. With their idols they've committed adultery. They have even offered up to them for food the children whom they bore to me. So that's another reference to the slaughter, the sacrifice of babies that were actually conceived during a pagan ceremony for the purpose of burning them up later. And God says, how dare they do that? Moreover, this they have done to me. They've defiled my sanctuary on the same day and profaned my Sabbaths. They've actually moved idols into the sanctuary area. They've got images all over the place. We know that Ezekiel saw some of these things earlier. For when they've slaughtered their children in sacrifice to their idols, on the same day they came to my sanctuary to profane it. And behold, this is what they did in my house. So God is pointing out, they worshiped and murdered, and then they came and tried to worship me. They even sent for men to come from far, to whom a messenger was sent, and behold, they came. For them you bathed yourself, painted your eyes, and adorned yourself with ornaments. You sat on a stately couch with a table spread before it, on which you placed my incense and my oil. The sound of carefree multitudes was with her, and with men of the common sort, drunkards were brought from the wilderness, and they put bracelets on the hands of the women and beautiful crowns on their heads. This sounds like it's not just simply metaphor here, that there was actually the invitation to bring in foreigners to come to Jerusalem and engage in all sorts of paganistic practices, which very often included getting drunk and having sex. Then I said to her who was worn out by adultery, now they will continue to use her for a whore, even her, for they have gone into her as men go into a prostitute. Thus they went into Oholah and to Oholabah, lewd women. But righteous men shall pass judgment on them with the sentence of adulteresses, and with the sentence of women who shed blood, because they are adulteresses and blood is on their hands. So again, God saying they brought this on themselves. And so a righteous judgment is going to fall on them, and they will suffer. For thus says he who is God, bring up a vast host against them and make them an object of terror and a plunder. And the host shall stone them and cut them down with their swords. They shall kill their sons and their daughters and burn up their houses. And thus will I put an end to lewdness in the land, that all the women may take warning and not commit lewdness as you have done. And they shall return your lewdness upon you, and you shall bear the penalty for your sinful idolatry, and you shall know that I am he who is God. So this is, again, the fair warning that judgment is on the way. Probably while Ezekiel is speaking these words up in Babylon, the Babylonian army is already on its way. It may almost already be in Judah. Because the next thing that we read in Ezekiel 24, is going to be related to the start of the siege. Now, we're not going to go to Ezekiel 24 just quite yet. First, I want you to bounce over to Jeremiah 52, because we always want to remember we got two prophets talking about the same stuff, but they are hundreds of miles apart. But God has them connected through his Holy Spirit of inspiration, and so there is no time lag here. When things pop down in Jerusalem, immediately Ezekiel is told about them up in Babylon. So Jeremiah chapter 52 is Jeremiah's record of King Zedekiah's rebellion, that he had rebelled against the king of Babylon. We know that happened in 590 BC in the early part of it. Verse 4 then says, in the ninth year of his reign, in the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came with all his army against Jerusalem and laid siege to it. And they built siege works all around it. So this is the date. 10th day, 10th month, that's Jewish dating. And it's the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign. So we can pin this down. This is the end of July, the end of December, 590 BC. The end of December, 590 BC, by our calendar system. Now, on that exact same date that the siege started, hundreds of miles away, and we do not have instantaneous communication in the human world at this time. It takes days for a series of riders to get things any distance at all. It takes a couple of weeks for information to come by a series of riders from Jerusalem up to Babylon. But on the exact day that the siege started, Ezekiel 24 takes place. Here it goes. In the ninth year of Zedekiah, in the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, the word of he who is came to me, son of man, write down the name of this day, this very day. The king of Babylon has laid siege to Jerusalem this very day, and utter a parable to the rebellious house and say to them, thus says he who is. Now again, I want to stress, no instantaneous communication in human terms during this time period. But Ezekiel knows the exact day, and he writes it down, and it'll be verified later by survivors of the siege. God knew, and Ezekiel therefore knew, exactly when the siege started. And this is the parable that God wants him to say on that day. Set on the pot. Set it on. Pour in water also. Put in it the pieces of meat, all the good pieces, the thigh and the shoulder. Fill it with choice bones. Take the choicest one of the flock. Pile the logs under it. Boil it well. Seethe it also, its bones in it. So basically, put on the cook pot. Let's make soup. And let's make it really good soup. And what's the point? Verse 6. Therefore, thus says he who is God, woe to the bloody city, to the pot whose corrosion is in it, whose corrosion has not gone out of it. Take out of it piece after piece without making any choice. So God says, look, this cook pot is nasty on the inside. So we got to clean it up before we can make really good soup. So take out all the bits and pieces. Verse 7, for the blood she shed in her midst, she put it on the bare rock. She did not pour it out on the ground to cover it with dust. So she didn't even cut up the meat properly. So judgment has to come in the form of the Babylonians arriving on the 10th day of the 10th month in the 9th year of Zedekiah, the final king of southern Judah.